What's up, witches? Welcome to season two of the Better Witch podcast presented by the Modern Witch Network. I'm your host, Allie, aka Bronx Witch. I'm a tarot reader, Reiki master, and owner of Bronx Witch Headquarters, a spiritual shop and workshare space in the Bronx, New York. And I'm going to be coming to you every week with a new topic and a new guest co-host to talk about our real life experiences as practicing witches. Because when we know better, we witch better. Today's guest co-host is Janae Marin Tate. Janae is a practicing gourmet kitchen witch. She began learning the secrets of kitchen witchery at an early age from her mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. Now, she applies her knowledge of herbs, oils, magic, and kitchen witchery to her loose leaf tea and spice business, Kitchen Witch Gourmet. She also teaches tea leaf reading and other tea magic in the U.S. and in China, and is the author of Tea Magic, Spells, Rituals, and Divination in Your Cup. You can check out Janae on YouTube as Kitchen Witch Gourmet and learn more about her teas online at kitchenwitchgourmet.com. Obviously, we are here to talk about tea magic, something that I think is really wonderful. Tea, for me, is something that I really approach from a medicinal place. Mm-hmm. The teas that I make are medicinal teas, so they all address some type of issue or complaint that either I or folks in my life have had, and I've created a tea to address that. But when it comes to working magic with tea, that to me seems like a very kind of like obvious thing for any witch, because most witches are into their herbs. They're, you know, they love their herbs. They're making teas already. So working magic with that to me makes a lot of sense. But I think that it's important for us to clarify for folks that when you talk about tea, especially in your book, you are really talking about genuine tea. And I want to explain that to people, because I actually didn't know when I first started my herbal journey that there is a tea plant, the Camellia sinensis plant, which is native to China and Asia. And when serious tea folks, you guys like Janae, are talking about tea, oftentimes they are talking about something made with the Camellia plant. And the herbal teas that folks like myself make, or that people are often making over here in the Western world, are really more appropriately considered herbal infusions, and not technically tea, though, because they're steeped in a similar fashion, we call them tea. Is that quite right?
That's correct. But let's take it back to the Camellia sinensis bush, which is tea. So oftentimes people don't understand that the green tea, white tea, black tea, herbal or pura, yellow tea, it's all the exact same plant. So oftentimes people will think that green tea is different than black tea, or different than white tea, or different than the pu'ers, or just different. But the only thing different about them is how they're actually cured and dried. So first, that's the most important thing to address with tea. And like a little quick history on tea. So white tea is when the baby buds are just starting to come out from the branch and reach for the sunlight, and their hairs are all soft and silvery, and that's how they get the name white tea. They are the most mild in flavor, mild in caffeine, high in antioxidants. It still has a lot of that good healing value from the inside out after you drink and imbue it, or offer it, or however you're going to use your tea. So that's white tea. And that's the quick and down and dirty easy on that. green tea, it's a little more mature when it starts to come off the plant. They're bigger leaves and they're plucked, and they're quickly either flash fried or steamed. So if it's steamed dry, that's a Japanese process. If it's flash fried, it's a Chinese process. And that has the highest amount of antioxidants. So whatever that process is that they do, it really takes all of the healing energy in that plant and really pushes it out through the leaves. Then as you strain that into your water, or extract that into your water, you're really putting like high energy levels of antioxidants in your body that helps push out impurities, that helps can help heal cancer, can curb your appetite. I mean, just all the good things about green tea.
Yeah.
Okay, black tea real quick. That tea is like fermented. That's how it gets black. And that has the most caffeine content and the most familiar flavor that we are familiar with, like in the Western world. It used to only be green tea in China. That's all they had. And as they shipped it to Europe, what would happen on the ships is it would get hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold. And by the time the tea got from China to Europe, it was black. And yeah. So that's what Europeans thought tea was. So they didn't know that there was a difference. And the Chinese thought, what do you mean black rotten tea? We don't have black rotten tea. We have green tea. And then so anyway, so that's quick on the ABCs of green, white, and black tea. Those are the most basic teas that you got to know.
Thank you for that, because I definitely think that, you know, the average American tea drinker is not, you know, going into a supermarket or herbs store and they're thinking, well, black tea is one thing and green tea is something else and white tea is something else and red tea is something else, and to realize that they all come from the same plant is really cool, because it's like, oh man, like I never would have thought that. It's really just a matter of the process that has gone into the end product that changes it. But in reading up on the different benefits that the teas have, like green tea, talk about magic. Like that is one magical plant right there, and like stage of the plant for all of the things that it can do, from helping with weight loss to, like you said, preventing or even treating cancer. I mean, that is incredible. So to me, it really like tea really knocks it out the park in terms of like herbs that we really all should be getting to know and learning more about if we are if we are witching in the world in any way, whether we're looking at it medicinally or looking at it from a magical place, it just has an amazing energy that can do so much.
It has such a healing energy too. When you're doing any kind of healing rituals, green tea is right up there. So like China has this giant population, right? It's the domination of population. And one of the interesting facts when I was really got into studying tea is putting tea in water can actually like kill bacterias, can actually kill cholera. So when this was happening way back in the day, you know, a couple hundred thousand, 2000 years ago, China was experiencing like less birth rates, you know, less death rates upon birth. And they were really able to grow population because they weren't relying on like fermented wines or beers or ales or anything of the such. So people weren't getting sick with rotten wine. They were getting like healthier and stronger. Their population was getting healthier and stronger, and their brains were more, you know, stimulated, and their bodies were more stimulated to just be well. And so I think when you're working healing rituals, to not forget that, or if you don't know that, that's such a powerful intention to put into healing magic and healing teas. So even if you don't like green teas, because sometimes they're terrible, like a lot of people's complaint is they're bitter and they're this and they're that. And totally, like I'm not even addressing that they're not, but to just put that pinch of green tea in there with your other blends, I think is really powerful in drawing out that energy into B&B.
Yeah, I'm just getting so many ideas as you're talking, because one of the reasons I don't drink green tea nearly as enough as I should, but I'm definitely going to be increasing my intake, is just because it is a bit astringent. And so it can be kind of drying for me. And I personally kind of struggle with dehydration a little bit, not drinking enough water, and like my skin kind of being dry and stuff like that as it is. And I have found green tea to kind of exacerbate that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I am just really reconsidering how much I expose myself to green tea, because it's like, girl, drink the green tea and drink an extra cup of water, because the benefits.
And make your green tea weaker. Make
your green tea
weaker, because what
happens, I am a heavy steeper.
Yeah,
I
tend what to happens steep, in steep. China is they pour their tea over like a tea pet, so they're constantly like, you know, diluting down, adding more. So what happens is, like, black tea drinkers really like that rich, you know, yummy embodied flavor, and green tea you have to throw that out the window and go light. And then add to it, like add some fresh grated coconut in there with it, or add some orange peels or lemon rind in there with it.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, just go light on the green tea and you're going to still get so much more, because as you pour more water, I'm one of those people that I will put my tea steeper in the tea and I will just keep adding water to it.
Me too. Me too.
That's how you do it with green tea. And then you just lighten up on it, because it really is. Has all the health benefits.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, like, in terms of magic, like crushing up green tea into my herbal blends to dress a candle or to put into a healing sachet for someone, like that just seems like such a powerful ingredient to add. So I'm really glad that you have shared that with everybody. And something that you said in your book is tea is a blend of magic and alchemy. And I really love that so much. And I was hoping that you elaborate a little bit for folks and share, like, what do you mean by that? And why does tea hold like that powerful of a place in like your practice?
So we know that the actual definition of alchemy is turning metal into gold, right? So transmuting something from one state into another. And I think tea really does that, because you take a plant or a blend. So you might take tea and roses and lavender or whatever you're working with, and then you pour water over it. And then you create a whole other cup of gold, right? So you've just completely changed the whole presence and the whole energy. It is alchemy. It is going from a plant and changing it into a beautiful transmission of something else. And it's warm and it's healing and it's gold in a sense, because most teas really are in that amber gold color anyway. And I just think that when people talk about alchemy, to me, it just lights that from one to the next. It's a change. It's that somewhere in between and creating that transmission of magic and changing one state into another. And that's powerful stuff. You know, that's really powerful stuff when you go from this to that. And then that, when imbued or taken in, can then help to heal you, can help uplift you, can help soothe you. So then there's another state of that whole alchemy process that comes into it. And I really thank you for catching that tea is alchemy, because that's a really special thing to me.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I love that so much. That really, you just really did a great job of putting into words how I feel. Oh my God, look at that tea kettle. Yes. So cute. Love it. You really did a great job of putting into words like what I feel about tea. But I was like, oh, those are the words that I could never find for like why tea is so special and why I enjoy making it and experiencing it, because I really feel like there are very few things that we interact with every day. So much of our foods and the things that we consume are so processed. We tend to drink a lot of coffee, you know, which is very like activating and caffeinated and not necessarily super great. But tea is one of those things that I feel like really can turn your whole mood around in a positive way and really make you feel better. You know, when you're sick, what does mom do? She makes you a cup of tea. Like that's the first step.
Tea is the second most consumed beverage in the world.
Is it really?
Do you know what the first most consumed beverage is?
I'm gonna.
Are you ready?
I want to say coffee, but it might be like wine.
It's water.
It's water. Water. Thank God. Thank God.
Right. Water is the most consumed beverage and tea is the second most consumed beverage. So worldwide, not in our bubble of the United States.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why I didn't think water. I was like, it's either going to be like beer or wine or coffee.
No, it's tea. The whole world drinks tea. The whole world, like really, our grandparents, our great grandparents, coffee just really has taken over in the past 100 years and 100 and a half years with Boston Tea Party and you know, not being able to get tea from England and getting out from the taxation. And I could get all technical,
right, but all that stuff. Yeah.
All that, because tea is so crazy. Not is it only magical, it's political. It's a commodity. It just holds all of these vibrations that you can mix into your magical spells.
Right.
So it's, I'm totally in love. Well,
and I love that. Cause now I'm thinking about tea as a revolution.
Right.
As a protest.
Right. Wow. Right. Right. See? Mm. Yeah. It's, I started out, I started a tea company, a small little tea business, you know, 12 years ago, blending up tea. And I just wanted to sell love and happiness. Like, I really wanted to sell love and happiness. I had a little bit of a scare. I had like an aromatherapy company 100 years ago, like my first little business. And I told this guy that this lavender was going to help his wife sleep and blah, blah, blah. Well, he came back just completely angry at me. And really, it wasn't about me. It was about his wife was sick. But it took me a while to wrap my head around that, right? Mm-hmm. And he was completely angry and was going to sue me and this and that. And he stomped out and all the things. And so that just never left me. And I, even though I completely understand that tea is so medicinal and aromatherapy is so medicinal, I just got to the point where I was like, I'm going to sell love and happiness.
Hmm.
And then the first tea I ever blended was one called Abundance of Happiness. Hmm. And then Love Tea number 3. And because there's so many people want to walk up and be like, hey, do you have a tea for this? Do you have a tea for that? And there's so many herb combinations that you can put together. And I got to the point where I'm like, well, I'm not a doctor or a pharmacist. And, you know, I really can't help you with that. But I've got this wonderful happiness that I could sell you.
Yeah. And
switch that around. Not that I'm saying that there's no healing modalities in tea, because there's so many, but I just wanted to just focus on that. Just the whole, I don't know where this conversation came from.
You know, but yeah, giving people that good feeling. And like, and that makes me curious about, and I'm sure folks out there are curious too, about, how tea like became a part of your life. Cause we talked about your bio before you came on. And so folks know that you learned about kitchen witchery from your mother and your grandmother and your great grandmother. And so this was very much in your family. And I've read in your book and I saw, you on your clip on Good Day America talking about the kitchen witch and that energy that, you know, has been passed on for so many generations as being that spirit of the kitchen. And so did tea enter into your life in a magical way, like right from the beginning? Or was there like a point where you were like, oh, tea is something so much more than just, you know, a cup of something?
When I was a kid, like, I didn't even know that tea was tea. I thought it was peppermint. I thought peppermint was tea.
It was tea.
I had no, and I thought like the biggest, most amazing alchemy about peppermint tea was that you could put hot chocolate in it and then you could have peppermint hot chocolate tea. I just thought that was tea, right? And then as I got older, I realized, oh, there's Earl Grey and there's, you know, your standard Lipton's. And but it really wasn't until one day I was sitting in a tea shop in New Orleans, or a magic shop, really the bottom of the cup. This was, gosh, 100 years ago, like early 90s. I'm aging myself. I'm sitting in this tea shop and they're like, would you like a tea leaf reading? Or they brought me a cup of tea or something like that. And then I was just talking to the person and the next thing you know, I'm getting a reading and then everything just kind of changed. I was like, oh, this isn't just sweet tea. This is a whole new cup of tea. And I just started.
Literally,
I was just like, yeah, how to tell fortunes from tea leaf reading. And I thought that was, that just clicked in me, because when I was a kid, I used to take my cereal, like, you know, your Cheerios. I don't know. In my generation, we were raised in front of the TV on Saturday mornings with a box of cereal. And, you know, I would wait till I got down to the last little bit of Cheerios, and I would spin it around in a circle. And then, like, I would kind of interpret the pictures that it would make. So I started kind of divining then, and that's when I clicked, oh, tea leaf reading. Oh, that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, and then learned all about tassiography and just kind of wandered deeper into peppermint and lavenders and green teas. And
yeah,
it's a life journey. So I wouldn't say that there was ever a day that I'm like, today I'm going to be a master of tea. I'm going to be the mistress of this. But then one day I woke up and I'm like, wow, I'm like the mistress of this. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The mistress of tea sounds so fancy. I love that very much. That should be like, you know, your alter ego Instagram handle or something. The mistress of tea.
It should be. I know, I have to come up with something, because I've been Kitchen Witch Gourmet for so long, because it's all about the tea proper. I'd never really promoted myself as the mistress of tea, or like, I don't even know. Now I have this book out and they're like, you need a book page. You need like Janae Marin Tate, the author page. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but I'm just starting to get all these social medias down for Kitchen Witch Gourmet, and now I have to change it. Ah, so I don't know. Mistress of Tea does sound pretty cool.
I like that very much. It might have to be, you know, for the sequel or part two of the book, The Mistress of Tea. I want to go back a little bit.
That's not a bad idea.
Right? The Mistress of Tea. And then it could just be all, that could be more about like your tea story and like, you know, how you work magic with tea and like your personal thing. Just throwing out ideas there.
Yeah, I was doing some New Year's magic and I'm like, what's the next book going to be about? Because I'm really excited about it and I'm just still riding high. This one just came out, but I want to keep writing and keep putting things out there. And then today,
Mistress of Tea. When I see it on the shelves, I'm going to be like, woo woo. I know the moment this was born.
What's your favorite tea besides? And we know green tea is not your favorite, but do you have a favorite tea proper?
Yeah. So I really enjoy chais. And so that's usually a black tea base with various spices. And I make a chai blend myself. That's called my blood clot chai.
Yeah.
That is for menstrual cramps and period symptoms, and it's made with blue cohosh root and cramp bark to help with the cramping and to help kind of like facilitate your menstrual cycle, because I've had some struggles with that in my life in terms of bad cramping, bad bloating and things like that, and that's a problem that a lot of my girlfriends have had, a lot of coworkers have had, and I was like, I'm gonna make a tea that really like knocks it out, you know what I mean? Nice. Because I think one of the things that folks who kind of poo-poo on tea or like tea is that they don't necessarily think that it can be really effective at right. addressing like a specific issue. It sort of seems like a softball way to treat something. And, you know, folks are like, yeah, it could never be as effective as an Advil or, you know, some type of right. ibuprofen. And I was like, I'm going to see if I can do this with a tea. And the experience that I have had and the feedback that I've gotten from people is like, oh yeah, for sure. Within a cup, I feel so, so, so much better. But just generally, I really like the way black tea and spices really pair themselves together for a chai blend, just a good Assam. Mm-hmm. Tea is usually my go-to there. So I enjoy that a lot. And also I, you know, Westerners, we don't really do a lot of putting like dairy in our tea, adding cream to our tea the way you might see more often in Europe and things like that. But I find that black tea lends itself well to being made kind of sweet and creamy, which can be mm-hmm. like really satisfying and stuff like that. So yeah, I think I'm an Assam black tea type of gal.
I like black tea with cream and honey too. Mm-hmm. I love chais, you know, masala chai is also not only helps with your blend, but masala chai, what's traditionally in there, like the cloves and cinnamons and gingers, mm-hmm. that all really helps to purify the body of like toxins and parasites. So it really helps to flush out all those germs in us. And we mm-hmm. as humans, we have germs.
Yeah. Something that you mentioned earlier, you talked a little bit about tassiography, and I do want to talk about tea leaf reading and tea cup reading and all of that great stuff. But I wanted to go back to what you talked about with water being the most consumed beverage, because water is something that, first of all, I think it's so fantastic that you dedicate an entire chapter to water in your book, all the different types of waters that you might consider making your tea with and the different energies that they have, the different properties that they have. But I do think that when we think about tea, we don't really think about this is water. You know, we think about tea as something, I guess the alchemy is successful that it transforms into something so different that we don't even think about, like, wait, I am drinking mostly water here. You know, I'm using maybe a teaspoon's worth of herbs to transform this water into something else, but I might have a whole mug of water here. And I thought that was really important, because I think all witches, whether they're into tea or anything like that, is either already or aiming to be as in tune with nature, as in tune with the elements as possible. And water is such an important one on this earth, and our own human bodies being made up of so much water, and, you know, it relating to so much that we do in magic. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about the importance of water in tea, maybe both from the perspective of, you know, how water can maybe change the flavor of tea or the process of making the tea, but also how it impacts the energy and the magic of the tea, the type of water that we use.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, all of that.
So water is really the vital fluid. Sometimes I just think water is God also. I know that's getting way esoteric.
No, I feel really, you there.
Really fine. Anyway, okay, so let's go back to the different types of water. And it's important to remember that, you know, you can't drink all the waters out there. You know, not everybody lives in a pristine climate that you can just go drink some river water. So it's important that we remember that we could charge our water in the river, next to the river, by the river, just to absorb that in there. Like, we know we can't drink ocean water, but we can take a gallon of water, like straight from the store, like in the plastic bottle, and go to the beach and like charge, you know, with our energy and our vibration, our intent, the whole ocean, right? Purifying, cleansing, all of that. So that is important first to remember, that you can't just always drink it. You can drink rainwaters, but it also depends on what's coming out of your sky, the pollution in your sky. You're going to get that flavor in your water also. So you have to be prepared to accept, feel, and understand what that is. Also, you don't have to make your tea out of all rainwater. You can add, depending on your magic, you know, 7 drops, 3 drops, 2 drops of that water into your tea, because now it's been charged out there, so you can add it to it. I also like to say that if you are, you know, collecting rainwaters or snow water or whatever, it is important to make sure you bring that water to a full boil too, because it's, you know, I say that because the fire is the ignite source, right? That puts the power to it. It creates it. It brings the energy. It brings the flame. It brings the magical properties up. So it's not like it's burning it out, but it's igniting that power in there. Right. And there's so many things I can say about water, because like you have this, you know, water that you collected outside, you're going to make a few drops of it in your tea. Say it's like storm water, right? Or like a deep, deep rain water, where you're using this water in your tea to soften a situation, like how it softens the earth, like those heavy rains. So if you can get that energy into somebody that you need to soften up by using a few drops of that heavy storm water, rain water, if it has like electricity in it, lightning, you know, that's going to add quick spark now, quicksilver, quick as lightning, energy vibration into that, or to see like divinely, like a flash of energy if you're doing it in tea leaf reading. Am I getting out there?
No, yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, good. So it's not like you have to drink a whole cup of it, but water does change the flavor of tea, period. We know that not everybody has the most fantastic sink water. You want to use a nice purified water, and you can get all into like the perfect water for a specific kind of tea, because there are tea snobs out there that are completely that.
Yeah.
I am not that. I feel like if you just have some sink water and you have a bag of tea somewhere that you found in a drawer, by all means, brew it up, boil it up, put that tea bag in there, and then get creative. Do I have an orange laying around? Do I have an apple? How can I change this flavor? How can I add to this? So water is by far the most important element of tea besides tea itself, because there's so much more water in your cup than anything else. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, if you just simply, you know, bless your teacup, bless your water, bless just by that intent, just by that prayer, by that energy, it will change the flavor. Like if it doesn't taste super good, then just ask it to taste better. Because water is living. Water is life.
Very, right.
Water, there's only so much of it. And it comes down, it goes back up, it goes through, it goes, I mean, it's just this living organism thing, I mean, that just never stops. And it remembers, so remember to heal, remember to clean, remember to, yeah, I'm going to reorganize and taste better for you because you respect me. So I'm going to respect you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
If I speak for the water.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so, and I think this is a good time for a break.
This show is part of the Modern Witch Podcast Network. For more shows like it, visit www.modernwitch.com.
I love that, and I love that you mentioned that, you know, you can just add a few drops of a water. For me, in my own practice, one of the most important types of waters that I work with are my own tears. There's, you know, when you are raising energy and you are maybe in chant or dancing or singing or in prayer, whatever it is for you, and you get to the point where you are crying out and you are actually tearing up at how the energy is moving and shifting or what it is that you are asking for. I have let myself cry and let a few drops fall into my teacup and, you know, maybe then go and offer that to a spirit that I'm asking for help or something. That has often resulted in great results because that water holds memory. You know, we've seen that in actual laboratory tests that we can play music to water or introduce water to some type of vibration and see how it actually changes on like a real
Emoto's book is amazing on that. Yes.
Yeah. Which book?
Dr. Emoto, E-M-O-T-T-O. He does this, all the studies on water from just adding the word love to the side of water, what it looks like under a microscope, as adding the word hate next to water and what it looks like under a microscope.
Yes, yes. I wasn't thinking of the name. Yes. I would love to read that book. I should put that on our book club list. And so it holds memory. It's very much alive. And so for me, I feel like my prayer or my intention, whatever it is that I am so earnestly, genuinely desiring, is in my tear. And so it's almost the equivalent of maybe writing a petition paper and sticking that into something, like right in my tear itself, those couple of drops really communicates what it is that I am asking for in a clear way. And I could offer that tea, or I could even consume that tea and really embody what my intention is, what I'm trying to create for myself in my life. So there's so much, so many powerful things that we can do with water. And then tea is just this perfect vessel, being mostly water.
That tear thing is beautiful. That's really nice. That's good magic, right?
Yeah, it's effective. I got that from a hoodoo teacher that I know. He was formerly a minister in the Christian church and is now a magic worker, hoodoo worker. And but there's a lot of those elements of like what it's like in the Southern Christian churches in his practice, a lot of prayer, a lot of, you know, catching the spirit, as they say, really, really feeling the moving of the energy of the spirit that you're calling on. And it will oftentimes move you to cry out, to, you know, really express yourself. And it's like your tears kind of carry that. So I like to work with them a lot. And sometimes I'm just depressed and they just fall in my cup by accident. But sometimes it's intentional. And I'm like, let me put it in there because I think this will really help. Nice. And it has, yeah. I wanted to ask you about divination with tea, because I feel like that's so important for us to talk about. Your book is called, for those tuning in, you can see the cover here. And for those listening in, it's called Tea Magic, Spells, Rituals, and Divination in Your Cup. So I think we absolutely have to spend at least a little bit of time talking about divining with tea, because this is something that goes back probably as long as tea has been around, divining with tea leaves in particular. But I really love that you talk in your book about divining in your tea cup, because I've always been exposed, like more of a hydromancy thing. I've always heard of the tassiography, which is divining with the tea leaves that are left over after steeping a cup of tea, etc. But you talk about divining in the cup itself, kind of the way you would like in a scrying mirror or in a pool of clear water or dark water. And I thought that was really cool as something that was definitely new for me to consider. So can you tell us a little bit about the difference between the two and how witches out there might go about divining either with a full cup of tea or with just the tea leaves?
Sure. So tassiography is the art of like future telling in sediment remains. So that could be tea, that could be coffee, that could be wine. It could be anything that would leave a sediment. I mean, somebody in the comments earlier asked about tobacco leaf reading. I don't know about that. Like if you're supposed to drink that or toss it out there and read it like stone. So I don't know the answer to the tobacco leaf reading, but when you read, where to start? So I really, you know, I think that the best readers create their own way of reading, right? Yeah. Because they're just taking in the source. So they're not reading the little book in the tarot card deck, you know, they're reading. So I put that on tea also. And because water remembers and water carries vibration, tea leaf reading to me is when you are sitting with your mom, your grandma, your best friend, and you are having a conversation with them about that no good so-and-so did me dirty and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, if you've got your tea leaves floating around in there while you're having this conversation and then you look over to read them, you might see like the knife in the back and the stab. But the vibration of what you were talking about is carrying that over, because water is such a conduit, right? In the whole vibration thing. And you're supposed to put your tea leaves in there, drink your tea, and then read the stuck leaves. But I just found that just reading the leaves in general, on the water, in the water, on the cup, just became the whole crystal ball in a way, the whole teacup cauldron. And same as if you are sad and sick and ailing and you're having this conversation with somebody, and then you start to see in the cup as you're having this conversation, you know, maybe what would symbolize a ray of sunshine, it would start symbolizing, oh, but you're going to get over this. This is moving in this direction. And because tea water does move, it does move the leaves around. And so I feel that reading on the water, in the cup, the whole thing is an opportunity to read. Mm. I think reading tea leaves is really a messy concept. Like you have to drink the tea down, you have to put your little napkin over your dish, you have to put this over, you have to flip it over, not make a mess, It's messy for sure. Mm-hmm. And if somehow if you can incorporate that reading while you're drinking the tea down, you get the benefit of where the leaves land. And so you still get to read it, but yet have that movement. And sometimes when I'm reading for people and they still have their tea leaves in there and a little bit of water, I will say, give that a swirl. And I'm like, are you sure you want to swirl? You know, why don't you swirl clockwise if they're trying to bring something to them? Or let's get rid of that guy. Swirl counterclockwise. Let it go. Let it go. Let's see what happens now. And so it gives more of a movement with when you add the hydromancy and the tassiography and the whole teacup cauldron in your reading.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. I know that you were talking in one of your videos about stirring your tea, and the directions that you stir your tea can, first of all, be something that you use to infuse intention into your tea, but also it can tell you quite a bit about someone who might be having a cup of tea with you, paying attention to the way that they are stirring their tea. I thought was really very interesting. I was like, I'm going to start paying more attention when people are stirring their tea around me, because that can let you know a little bit about the space that people are in too, and maybe even a little bit about their intentions towards you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, being a reader and being intuitive and being psychic is about receiving direct connections from spirit, but it's also about just being secure enough to just look around and just pay attention and see where, how people act, you know, how people are. Well, we all know that if we're, you know, have any sense out there on people reading, but some people don't have that. But, and I like to think of the spoon as like the magic wand too. Here, stir your tea, and to just ask them to stir it and see how they stir it. You know, it's interesting. Like an erratic stir, that's kind of going to be an erratic, chaotic person, you know, oftentimes found in disbelievers or people that don't really believe in, you know, the occult or divination. And then there's the bringing it to you, the releasing it. And then there's like the hard cut, right? The swirl cut. What kind of line are you drawing? You know, tell me what's going on over there. And then the figure eights, you know, what kind of piece do you have going on? Let's talk about that. What are you working on in business? And so it's just a long, and I started reading the tea. Like I had the tea business before I really started reading tea leaves, though it just comes natural. I'm a natural reader. I can read cards and read this, and I can pick up, you know, like most readers, you can pick up some gravel and throw it on the ground and get a reading out of it, right?
Right.
It's about seeing it. So I'm like, oh, I am not going to let tea leaf reading bring me down or scare me, because it's such a, you know, it's a Victorian thing. It goes on beyond to like, let's say, I don't want to say the wrong occult. I don't want to say gypsy. Don't say gypsy.
Romani. Yeah.
Romani people that, you know, started traveling and reading tea leaves and coffee leaves, and I'm sure they didn't write down step by step how to do it. They just did it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that oftentimes with whatever you're trying to read, you can get too caught up in the little book. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be like, I'm going to read this cup of tea. Let's sit down and read this tea and not doubt yourself. Because if you see it, it's true. It's what you're meant to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I think trusting your intuition is so paramount and so central to just being a witch in general and working a magic in general, whether it's divining or casting or anything like that, realizing that we're constantly receiving information and messages from all around us, and we're picking up on those messages. We're often doing a really great job. Like when people talk to me and they're like, how do you read tarot? How do you? And I'm like, you know, it's the same thing that you're doing all the time. It's just that you might not trust yourself enough to go with it.
Right.
And you dismiss it and say, I'm not sure. Or I had a feeling that I shouldn't do this thing, but I'm going to do it anyway because, you know, that's silly. And it's like, no, that initial impulse that you had is something to be trusted. And a cup of tea might actually help you slow down.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, listen to that and trust yourself. Like if you've got that feeling like, I don't think I should do this thing, maybe make a cup of tea.
Right.
And sit there and ponder that tea and just let yourself be quiet through the whole process and allow yourself to build up the trust in yourself. And maybe the tea can help give you some confirmation and make you feel like, okay, I'm not crazy here. I have this feeling and now I'm looking at my teacup and I just swore I saw, you know, someone get robbed. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I shouldn't go to this thing. Right, right. Exactly. Tea can teach us so much. Now, divination is something that I think people kind of readily think about when we think about tea and tea magic and tea leaf reading being something that even in like non-magical circles is fairly popular. You can go into like a Target and find, you know, mugs with designs on the inside designed for reading tea leaves. So I think a lot of people are familiar with that. What people might not be as familiar with is the concept of communicating with spirit with their tea. And you talk quite a bit about tea as a way of doing spirit communication or of honoring spirits, maybe honoring the dead or ancestors. And you talked about the tea party for the dead, which reminded me so much of like the Dumb Supper and like Wiccan mm-hmm. traditions of setting a seat at the table for those who have passed along and really just kind of sitting down and having dinner with them. And I love the idea of sitting down with spirit and having a cup of tea with them as well. And I was wondering if you can kind of share with folks how they might do that, if they're interested in having their first tea party with the dead or using tea to communicate with spirits. Are there any pointers for how to get started with that kind of practice?
Yes. So sharing tea with the dead is something that you want to kind of ease into. You know, you never know what you're going to just pull in. So start with your own ancestors first. Start with your most beloved, trusted dead, your grandmothers, your grandfathers, and so forth, your aunties, your uncles. Start there. Start with honoring them with a cup of tea. Because like you said before, Ali, it is about slowing down a little bit. It's about the vibration. It's about listening. It's about accepting the answers and hearing the answers in divine sight, your divine eye, and in your cup. So start with just simple things that you would want to say to, let's say, like I like to honor my great greats because they definitely drank tea, right? They were mm-hmm. all the tea drinking generation. Tea was often hard to come by. It was expensive. So to them, it's an honor to be able to share tea with them because it's so readily available. And I've made this beautiful business out of tea. So start with what those that you know in your heart and get comfortable with listening to answers like the soft, you know, feeling that you get on your shoulders or the back of your neck or wherever you feel that angel vibe from. Mm-hmm. So then once you got that down and you want to start really honoring a whole table full of dead, I would say, you know, invite your family over to honor like the Dumb Supper. You're going to honor your grandmother that had just passed. You would come, everybody would bring, you know, something that reminded them of the grandmother, and they would sit down and have a cup of tea for them and a cup of tea for her. And as you go around the table and you tell a story about her and you drink your tea and you honor her. And I swear when I do this with my friends and family, when I facilitate tea parties for people who have crossed over, I swear they are sitting in that chair and people mm-hmm. have said, oh my God, I see her. I'm like, don't look directly at her, you'll lose it. But mm-hmm. you know, it's peripheral. And so you kind of warm up there still with your beloveds, the ones you're close to. And then once you feel like you've got that down and you want to really just call in some guides to help you, you can offer tea on an altar space and ask for guides to come in. You can ask for deities to come in, you know, whoever you're working with, you know, Ceridwen, Hecate, you know, whoever you are working with, honoring them with tea is really powerful. Mm-hmm. Tea with the Dead. I have this really amazing friend named Ginger Marie who actually showed up.
I was going to mention, I was like, I don't want to spoil it because I do want people to get the book and read the whole story about Ginger Marie because it's really beautiful, but it's also really personal. And I thought it was really nice that you let us into your life and share that personal story with us. So I was like, I don't know if you're comfortable talking about it.
There's a million copies, right?
Right.
So she did that because when I presented that to Llewellyn, they axed it. They were like, yeah, no, this doesn't need to be in here. Nope, done.
Yeah, it's a little intense.
Yeah, okay, all right, yeah. And then when the book came out and I got a copy, it was in there. And I'm like, oh, Ginger, you did that. So I was like, okay, girl, I'm here to tell your story. I love you so much. And it was way edited down for sure because it was definitely an intense story. But that would be like the first real I'm going to have tea with the dead. And that wasn't a direct related bloodline, but a friend. And she, so Ginger Marie's dead. But, she is definitely very personal. And so I will ask her sometimes, hey, I want to look in and get some really deep answers from the cosmos. Can you bring me a guide that can help me untangle this? So I'll honor her with tea and also honor whoever she brings into me with tea. Now, before I just go in and inviting people, there's lots of things you have to do. You have to protect your space that you're in. You have to make sure that only you're asking for the highest good to come in, to be careful not to, there's dark entities out there, right?
Right.
Make sure those aren't coming in with you. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of ways to honor the dead and have tea with the dead and bring the dead forward.
Yeah.
Through different herbal combinations, through different tea combinations, and just different vibrations, right?
Yeah. Like that was funny, that vibration in the background. I was like, oh, the vibration. I was like, am I hearing that or is that just happening right now? But you literally took my next question right out of my mouth, which is, this podcast is very much geared towards helping baby witches become better witches and to navigate some spaces and some practices a little bit better, with a little bit more confidence, with a little bit of guidance from folks who've been doing this for longer or have a little bit better hold on things. And so I was hoping that you would be all open to talking about some of the things that that witches should maybe be doing to protect themselves if they are going to, open themselves up to communication through tea. Because I thought it was interesting in the book, you offer some recommendations for how we can use the tea itself to add an extra layer of protection to make sure that either we're calling in the spirit that we are looking for, that we feel confident that we're speaking to who we think we're speaking to, and just to sort of put up a barrier against other spirits that maybe are just a little lonely and would love to have a cup of tea, but maybe we don't want to have a tea party with.
Right. Like it's time to go away now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I was hoping you could share some of those tips and tricks for the baby witches out there in terms of navigating a safe tea party.
I really like a 2-ounce bottle where they're about this big, right? 2 ounces, Boston round spray bottle. And I like to brew up a really strong green tea and let that cool and put that in the spray bottle with a little piece of jetstone or even a few pieces of sage leaf. And I like to shake that up and I like to use that as a protection barrier. So green tea, going back to being like super health packed and antioxidant packed, I like to see that as a barrier of health and healing and wellness around me. So illness can't come through, darkness can't come through, because it's just this really bright, shiny, and then a healing barrier. And the jet helps to absorb that darkness that might be trying to come through, so it can kind of trap it. And then the sage helps to disperse it, right? Helps to kind of get rid of it. So if you're going to do any kind of work with tea and with the dead, that's a simple little recipe to just mix up: green tea, a jetstone, and some sage leaf, and just cool it and then spray it around your space. On your hands, sometimes you can hit your teacups with it, your dishes beforehand, if just a light mist. So there's one thing to just practice
when you're
when you're new, because it really is about protection. And if you are scared to do something, that is your gut telling you don't do it. The time's not right. Mm-hmm. And just allow that to be. Don't push it. Don't push it. Mm-hmm. If you're just, it's like some people that are really like natural doors that entity can just come through. They're either just like freewheeling and telling you all the energy. And those people really have to be like, they have to learn how to shut down and close it out. Mm-hmm. And then some people that all that energy is coming through, they get really scared and closed off and they mm-hmm. don't want anything to do with it. So both those kinds of people have to learn how to protect themselves first. Like, where are the boundaries and right. where are, you know, where do I feel safe? Because if that's who you are, if that's how spirit enters through you, you have to learn how to live with that on this planet. Like, that's obviously one of your right. lessons. So, yeah.
I think that's great. I think that's a great one. Clearing your space is super effective, and being really clear in your intention of who you're calling on mm-hmm. are, I think, two of the best things that you can do that really don't require a lot of ceremony or setup, you know, complicated mm-hmm. fancy circle mm-hmm. settings or anything like that. I think some green tea and a bottle with, you know, a dark stone and some sage leaf is like, boom, most of us will be able to access those ingredients, those tools, and be able to do that or do something similar. Even if you don't have a spray bottle, you could sprinkle it around your space with your hands or something like that. You know, maybe in a counterclockwise way to be clear that you're setting up a sort of mm-hmm. a moving area mm-hmm. around yourself, you know? So I think that's great advice and very helpful. And I know that that's going to help our baby witches have their tea parties much, much better. So I thank you so much for that. So we are getting close to the end of our time. I don't want to take up too much of your afternoon. So I want to remind everyone that now is the time, if they haven't already, to drop their questions in the comment box. And I will scroll through to see if there are any, you know, questions that came in late. Nuri says, outside of tea reading, what are some other of your preferred divination methods? And great info.
I love divining with a coin. I love Ooh. The quick flip of a yes or no. No, so I love coin flipping. And I have made like giant, giant life decisions on flipping of a coin. Like, hey, should I move from Portland, Oregon to Austin, Texas or New Orleans? New Orleans it is. Yay. Or should I move to Atlanta, Georgia or Dallas, Texas? You know, Dallas it is. And I just would go with that. And really, or simple things. It's like, okay, do I do this or this? Okay, there it is. You know, and so I really trust my angels and my guides to help. Mm-hmm. And I love reading cards. Of course, I love reading cards and just being able to do a quick pick or a full spread or whatever. But I found in my days of being busy that any coin, if you need an answer, or like if you, speaking of tea, if you are like, say, at Starbucks or wherever, and you're just ordering a tea and you've got your tea bag and you're doing your tea, that tea bag can act as a pendulum, right? So you can get a quick yes or no, or I don't know yet answer just by vibrating on the weight of the tea bag as a pendulum. So I do that a lot too. Like, I'll just let it, even though I have a loose leaf tea business, of course I still drink tea in bags. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, you can put your own tea in bags. I have little baggies I put my tea
exactly,
in.
Exactly, exactly. So I guess I divine mostly like that. Just sometimes, and you don't even realize as you're just walking through the day, you just notice the signs and the vibrations and the deja vus. And you're like, oh, okay. I hear you. Now, what does that mean? I hear you, but what does it mean? And then you spend the day trying to be like, oh, and then this, and you know, so it's just about really paying attention.
Yeah. I love that. Such sort of simple, if you will, but very straightforward ways of divining. because it didn't originate with a whole lot of fanfare and a table set up with candles and a whole thing. It was very much people using the tools around them to help them have those conversations in a way that was just a bit more clear. And it was often sticks and stones and bones and chunks of gravel and things that just were around. And if you're already making yourself a cup of tea, especially if you're making one with intention, then using that very cup can be helpful, but also just what's in your pocket. Maybe it's just a quarter that you're carrying around, kind of just feeling in between your fingers, thinking, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? Now that coin's all charged up with that question and it's really ready to fall where it needs to fall. So I think that's great. Thank you so much for that. So I think that is all of the questions that I have seen coming in, and you have been with us for a good long time. This has been such an amazing conversation. So I want to thank you so, so much for being with us. And before we go, if you wouldn't mind just letting folks know where they can find you, how they should tune into you, or, you know, if you've got anything going on that you would like people to know about.
Well, it's the beginning of the year, so I don't have a lot going on because my busy time is winter and fall. So I'm kind of getting a little detox time right now.
Some rest. Yeah,
good. But I just have this fantastic new book coming out. So check me out. You can get it on Llewellyn.com or Amazon.com, Tea Magic. And I am Kitchen Witch Gourmet. Gourmet because I'm fancy. So don't forget gourmet or you'll get a totally different witch out there. But I have more taste. Just so.
Yes.
So I am
a little shade with the tea.
I am on Facebook, Kitchen Witch Gourmet, Instagram, and TikTok. TikTok's kind of weird. Like, I'm just trying to figure that whole world out. Mm-hmm. But I get on there and I do my best, you know? And so the majority of people find me on Facebook or Insta. I try to hold up with the, I try to do the YouTubes, but I'm so busy having a tea company. Like, having a social media life is like a full-time job.
It so really is.
Sometimes I go like months without posting because I'm so busy making tea. So, but I'm going to make some changes this year. I'm going to really try to work smarter, not harder. And we'll see how that goes. I'm going to really focus on, you know, doing more podcasts and really touching base with everybody and really networking with you, Allie, and networking with just people.
Yeah.
And I plan on traveling the country a little bit this next year. I have so many friends that carry the book and racks of tea in their store. So I'm going to try to go around from store to store and do some tea classes. And
oh, I love that.
Yeah, I'm really working on that because I do a lot of really high-end uppity gourmet food shows. And I'm always like the witch corner, you know, and like there's all this like fancy gourmet popcorn and fancy this. And then there's Kitchen Witch Gourmet. And it's like they can't take their eyes off it. They're like, what's in those jars?
Yes.
So, And I love doing that. And I love connecting with so many people like baby witches and advanced witches, because at the end of the day, we are all witches. We all have that vibration and we all want to know, and we're all interested in that kitchen witchery, that primal healing, primal magic.
Yeah.
And so as much as I love doing these big ass events, I'm kind of tired of loading and unloading the trucks and, you know, managing the people and doing the things. So I'm going to take all of that energy and money, and I'm going to focus on going around the country to different stores and different shops. And so maybe you'll see me in New York.
I was going to say, thank you so, so much for tuning in, everyone. And thank you so much for being here, Janae. This has been absolutely amazing. It's just been absolutely fantastic. I just thank you so, so much for sharing all of your knowledge, all the information that you have, because when we know better, we witch better.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you, witches, for tuning in to another episode of the Better Witch Podcast. New episodes air on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Bronx Witch Coven YouTube channel and your favorite podcast platforms. No matter where you're tuning in from, we want to know what you think about today's episode. So make sure to leave us a review wherever you are. A special thank you to Bronx Witch Coven members whose membership makes this episode possible. If you'd like to tune in to the live recording sessions, watch the behind-the-scenes footage, and participate in the Q&As of future episodes, consider joining the Bronx Witch Coven. You can support this podcast by grabbing some sweet merch over in the Bronx Witch merch shop, sponsoring an episode with an ad spot, or following us on Instagram at Better Witch Podcast. Remember, witches, when we know better, we witch better. See you in the next episode, and blessed be.